Welcome to the RC Roundtable Podcast, where we discuss the latest RC hobby news, events, model reviews, and a whole lot more.
Do you really?
Yeah.
What are you guys laughing at? Did you want me to? You told me to do the introduction, but here you guys are, just yammering on.
Hey, we're having a good time. We don't need Terry. That's, how you doing, Vince? Hey, it's good to see you.
Yeah, how about that game last night?
It was awesome.
Yeah, all right.
So for the rest of you who are sitting alone in front of your computer or in your car, my name's Terry. This is episode 207 of the RC Roundtable Podcast. Sitting there sharing that screen, holding hands, are Lee Ray and Fitzwalker.
The dynamic duo.
The dynamic duo.
Yes, we're co-located today.
Yes. All right. And I guess there's good reason for that, because you guys are pairing up to go to the swap meet tomorrow.
Yeah, we're getting up at old dark 30 to drive.
Oh, my gosh.
Up.
I don't even know why we're going to go to bed.
Really?
We're going to have all this sugar, and we're going to drink lots of soda.
You just go binge watch something on Netflix.
I got tons of coffee downstairs. We're just going to be pouring in both hands. What are they? Just German Stein.
Yeah.
Is tonight setup night?
No. We're just...
No, at the event, I think it is.
Oh, yeah. There are people there right now setting up.
You guys should be on the road right now. All the good stuff's already gone.
It probably is.
No, too late. Richard's already gone.
I was going to say, Richard. So hold on. We'll touch on the Richardson swap meet is happening this weekend. It actually is. It's starting today for those who are setting up. But as we kind of hinted, if you are one of the exhibitors or, you know, you're selling stuff, this is where most of the transactions happen. So we missed this opportunity. So we're going early this tomorrow morning. Less than 24 hours to take the drive to Dallas and hope there's a couple of things worth buying.
Yeah. The good stuff never makes it out of the parking lot. Just goes from one car to another. And Richardson, Texas, near Dallas.
Yeah. Sort of what, Northwest Dallas?
Yeah. He's close. Yeah. So I'm just going to tell that story. I said it before in one of our other podcasts. I'll always remember Richard walking into the Richardson swap meet. Guy had a golf cart. They had golf carts. Remember the school? They had some golf
shopping
carts.
Shopping
carts. Excuse me. Did I say golf carts? Shopping carts. And this guy was wheeling in boxes. Okay. I saw him walking in. And the next thing I know, I see him leaving without anything in it because Richard took it all and put it on his table. I mean, guy didn't even get to put it down on his table. Richard took it all and put it down.
Richard's like, none shall pass.
I mean, it was fast. But, you know, you snooze, you lose. So he lived the motto, man.
All right, cool. All right, well, you boys have fun. Are you eyeing anything in particular?
I have something already that somebody we mutually know.
No way.
Gave me a heads up on. So I think I'll be coming home with it. It's not very big. Nothing major.
I'm going to charge a travel fee because I'm driving my Suburban. So.
Yeah. That ain't.
And we didn't mention our buddy Kurt Jensen's joining us.
Yes. Good rock.
He's not staying at Shea Ray tonight, but he'll be here early in the morning and we will take the drive. But, you know, we've done a great swap meet with Kurt before when we went to the Perry swap meet.
So yeah, you've seen those
that's dad jokes.
I was just going to say, you need one of those little thumb clickers that counts. And every time he tells you a dad joke.
You know, maybe, I kid you not, if we can commit to this, maybe every time he does that, I get my phone and I add it to a comment section on our Facebook page. Incoming dad jokes.
Yeah, because it's funny because sometimes I'm a little slow. I don't catch on that he's doing a dad joke because he'll start it like a normal conversation.
Oh,
he's really smooth at it. You're like, you know, he starts talking and like, you're like, wait a minute.
I'll tell you, when we saw him at Best, he started something. I was like, I'm not buying it. And he started laughing because he was like, you're not going to get me this time.
Anyway. All right. Well, you boys and Kirk have fun. Buy lots of stuff. Are you taking stuff to sell?
He is. I may have one or two items I'll throw in the cart.
All right.
I didn't really, I mean, I think this was just more to, we always go and they have some good stuff. And you know, we got right here what I got from a Richardson swap meet. We're going to talk about that on an RC rescue episode.
Nice.
But there are lots of planes that, you know, are out there, things you don't think you need, but then you realize you definitely need them.
Yeah, can't live without. So you got your Jug Clampett wad of cash with a rubber band around it. There you go. Peel some off.
You know, maybe I'll go open up the Monopoly game and
there you go.
Just throw that out there. Just see if I can get by. Yeah.
All right. So
the story, you said the Jug Clampett thing. I'm sorry to diverge, but you remember my friend Greg in South Carolina? I don't know if he's told you the story, but there was another guy we used to fly with a lot when I lived there. We were mutual friends. And this guy was very country. I'll put it that way. When did your Jug Clampett story remind me of this? And he apparently there's a story that Gregor was telling me that he went to a swap meet and wanted to buy some nice plane from somebody. And because he looks very country. The guy was really skeptical and didn't really want to sell it to his friend, and so oh crap, I can't remember the story. Well, the story was, even though he looked very country, he was a very excellent pilot, and B, he had the money to buy it.
So he pulls out the wad.
And says, "Well, too bad. I was going to buy it with a lot of money."
So I put the 20s around a roll of receipt paper.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, you boys have fun, and I'll expect a debrief when you come back. So in the meantime, let's talk about a new product. I don't think we've covered new products in an episode or two, and we got a good one, or it looks like a good one anyway. The Old School Model Works Raider, and quotes, the pirate stick.
Arr,
we couldn't decide on a name.
Which is funny because remember we've talked about it several times. The T-28 that I modified as a tailless,
yeah, stubby.
Yeah, my name for that was Arg, and
okay,
and. The story behind it is that's the sound that I made when I accidentally dribbled some epoxy on it when I was modifying it. So it just kind of stuck. No pun intended. So back to this Old School Model Works Pirate. It is essentially your classic stick model. It's got the pointy wingtips. It's got the rounded vertical stabilizer. It is the quintessential RC airplane. And I'm waiting for your feedback now.
Yes. It's a stick. Have you owned a stick?
I was thinking about that. And I have to admit, I don't think I've ever had an example of the classic stick in any size. So, yeah, I guess I'm not a real modeler.
I guess I'm not either. I've not had one. Okay. Now, that being said, I've had several slow sticks.
I've never had
an ugly stick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it goes by many names, right? I guess ugly stick or just stick. And then Great Plains had a version in kit form and ARF form. And it's kind of like a P-51 or a Cub. Any company that's ever made kits probably made a version of the stick. So it's just what you picture when you think of an RC airplane. And there's a reason they're so popular. People who have had them talk about how much they love them. So Tom from RC Plane Lab, he is a stick fanatic. So we'll have to ask him if he's got one of these in the queue. So let's go over the basics here. Scroll down a little bit. And the specifications are 60-inch wingspan.
Yeah, bigger than I thought, actually.
Yeah, that seems about normal, right? What is it, 40 size? Yep. It says 45 to 61 glow engine, or if you're using electric, it says 900 plus watt. Ooh, that's spicy. So what's the weight? It talks about 3 pounds. Wow. Oh, okay. Rain. Never mind. 3 pounds was the air frame.
Up to 7. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say 300 watts per pound. So we're still looking at 150 watts per pound of finished weight, which he predicts at 5.5 to 7 pounds. So, yeah.
It says standard servos here, but it's got 645s here. They're much bulkier, heavier heavy duty than standard servos.
They're the same case size though, right?
Yeah. Right. But I'm just, it's a similar to, but I'm thinking, you know, one's my Warbird very large model. So I'm just thinking that size does appear to be a standard size.
Yeah. You probably don't need upgraded torque and speed on this kind of airplane. It's a sport model. Yeah. So yeah, I just imagine he's going to sell bushels of these things. And so like all the other old school Model Works kit, it's laser cut balsa. So you're going to build it, cover it, make it the way you want, modify it in some way or other, perhaps.
And I was going to add, though, and I don't know, since I've never had a stick, and maybe some of the R versions have a flap option, but usually I just see full-span ailerons on these kind of airplanes. But this one, you know, has it as an option. It says right here, two additional servos if using flaps.
Right.
So you can do either.
Be kind of cool. And maybe you could do a crow setup. So let me go back and change my answer. I used to have the mini ultra stick, if that counts. That was 42, 45 inch. And it had flaps and ailerons and you could do crow. And now I've got the slow ultra stick. But again, I don't think those, other than the name, really compare to what this is. This is a big 40 size sport model. So I hate to make that comparison.
They were inspired, I guess, by this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Now, does he talk about the nose gear? I assume that's steerable nose gear.
Oh, I would assume so.
Yeah, so tricycle landing gear. You could probably make it a tail dragger if you wanted. Do whatever the heck you like.
I can't quite see, but does it have the scalloped ailerons? Those signatures.
Oh, it said you could have either or right here. You know, straight or scalloped edges.
Oh, okay. There we go. All
right. So which would you do?
Scalloped.
Scalloped looks good, but I wonder how much effort it adds to the covering job.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's on the right. Scalloped.
I'm going to paint them. I'm going electric and I'm painting them. There, done.
Yeah, covering, I imagine, is a bit of a pain.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because I'm going to mention the wings on my Malibu, my glider I'm working on. The wingtips have the shaped, you know, curve to them, and they are a pain to cover. But I knew full well when I was getting into this, since I'm not worried about, you know, glow fuel or whatever. I'm just spray painting those bad boys and putting the monocoat right up to them. I'm gonna have them nice and glossy. I don't need to be monocoating this. So I would probably do the same thing here. I'd go electric.
Yeah. All right, cool. I'm sure I would too. So, all right. I just wanted to mention that's out there. I'm interested to see the feedback that Mark gets, because on his social media, he often posts pictures of people who bought his kits and have built them or are in the process of building them. So you get to see the variety of what people do with these laser cut kits. And it's pretty interesting to see how people take it in different directions.
The only little minor complaint, if he's watching, is that I love that he has these details on the side right here. It's about the front hatch and the removable battery tray, but you can't click on it and enlarge. You can't zoom in on these features. So he needs to add a little, button that allow it to zoom in. Because the hatch picture here looks really good when you can, from here, for those of you watching on YouTube, and for those of you listening, it's even more difficult. I think he needs to add that feature. So we'll send him a little email and say, hey, get your website guy to fix that. Because those are like the scalloped edges right here. Yeah, we're talking about that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, speaking of the feedback that he gets, when the last time we had Mark of Old School Model Works on the show, we talked about the version that he did of, oh gosh, what's the name of that airplane now? The Raven, which was based on an EDF I designed a long time ago. And he's been posting pictures of those that are completed. And that's really cool for me to see that people building balsa versions of this model. And from what I've heard so far, people like the way it flies. I've got one in a box on the shelf over here. So when I have a little bit of time between projects, that'll be the next one on the bench. What are you snickering at?
As thick as DNS would.
We are live, folks, but I can't open up any of the web pages now.
Did Fitz break your internet?
I guess so. And now I've got a little warning on my screen saying my signal is bad. So going to his website has screwed up.
Yeah, that's you, because I'm clicking all around this website now.
So, all right. Well, how about we just do this?
Oh, that's a Lee problem. So we're able to talk to each other live streaming, but you can't click on a website?
You saw what I saw. I was like, hello. Anyway, we got the gist of the aircraft, so we didn't fail miserably.
All right, so let's look at the price real quick and talk about that. I think they're available already. Am I lying about that? It says first part of November. That's today. Today is what, November
1st? Oh,
yeah, and the kit is $289.95. So oldschoolmodels.com. Tell them Lee sent you.
That code will definitely get you 1% off.
Well, at least had to make bigger pictures.
It was a
that will add 5%. Right, let's move on to something else. We don't have an agenda listed here, so I'm just going to fly with it. We've got Fitz's trip. He left the country again. We can talk about that now if you want.
Yeah.
Sure. Right.
So apparently the government has seen fit to subsidize your jet setting Playboy lifestyle. And where did they send you this time?
Damn straight. I'm going native now. We actually joked about that. I probably should pick up like an apartment or something there. I've been there so many times lately. Really interesting. I'm not complaining. It's work, but
he's gonna rent this little square.
Yeah, a little.
It's gonna be like $3,000 a month.
Do you know what they call apartments? These ones, they call them mansions.
Oh wow!
They literally use the word mansion.
Wow.
And it's just sort of a semi-fancy apartment.
All right. So where did you go? What are we looking at?
So I actually went to a different location this time. Normally I go to the Tokyo area, just north of Tokyo, in a town called Tsukuba.
So Japan.
I'm in Japan. I don't
think the word Japan has come out yet.
Okay. Right. Yeah. First thing is I went to Japan. And in Japan, I normally go to the Tokyo area to the Japanese Exploration Agency, just north of Japan, north of Tokyo. But this time we're asked to go to a different location for the meeting we were having. And so I went to the city of Nagoya. Now, Nagoya is not really well known, perhaps, but it is right near the Kyoto and Osaka areas. Those are probably more familiar. So it was a bit of a interesting trip because we had to, we land, then we had to take a train to the Tokyo station and take a bullet train out to Nagoya, which was pretty neat. And if you get in the right time of day, you can see Mount Fuji as well on a trip. So this is I'll go through these pictures real quick. This is a picture of just looking at the hotel. I just thought it was an interesting looking city. It's a bigger city than I expected it to be. We were walking around and there's a drone station that you can buy drones. And I'm trying to read it. Sorry. Kakas drone.
He's trying to read it.
Okay. So yeah. It just says drone station. It's a Kakas. I know what a Kakas is. But anyways, it wasn't open, so we can do look in. But they actually sell apparently different types of drones and electric scooters. So we can go to the next page. There's some advertisement. So they have electric scooters and drones, but like your DJI drones and whatnot. And apparently have some sort of, you can rent a drone, apparently. I have no idea what this was, but this was kind of weird. Just walking in the store, I was like, what the hell is this?
Are they being robbed?
What's that?
Are they being robbed?
I don't know. It was just a one of those cardboard cutout things. And, this is Japan, so you see a lot of weird stuff. So you can go to the next one. There was a place where you can apparently feed the pigeons, and the pigeons got really, really friendly with you.
And then they charged you.
Then they charged you. Yeah, no, you had to buy the food. Yes. I think either behind, yes, it's 50 yen each for a little pellet of thing. You can go to the next one. But they, like, people were just feeding these birds. I just thought it was interesting. A lot of them. And they were sitting around. Wrestling. So this is a quick story. So we're walking around. So I should mention, apparently, when we got there that Sunday, we had a Sunday before we started work, they were having a festival. in Nagoya celebrating several, what do you want to call them, samurai warlords that were from the area. And they're very famous warlords. Have you ever heard of Tokugawa or Nobunaga? They're from this area, and so they just have this big festival, and they celebrate those warlords, and they have a whole kind of stuff going on. If you're watching the movie Shogun, the main, the not the English guy, but the main character, Japanese guy, is loosely based off of Tokugawa. So we were kind of just walking around, checking in the sights, and they had this wrestling ring popped up. And the guy on the left, we were walking, me and a coworker, we just happened to walk in before they started. And the guy starts talking to us and says, "Hey, where are you from?" And he had spoke pretty decent English. And we said, "Hey, we're from America." He goes, "Oh, America." And he bows to us. "Oh, yes." And he tells us that he's a amateur wrestler. And he goes, "Feel my muscle." And okay. So I felt his muscles. Man, his muscles must have been made out of cement. This guy was ripped. And he said he's like 60 years old or something like that.
Wow.
So that was kind of funny. But eventually, you can go to the next picture. They started doing some display wrestling. And we had two guys and this one girl. And they were just, throwing each other around WWE style. And this lady, for Japanese lady, she was an anomaly. She was a lot of woman. She must have been 6 foot tall and built like a brick house. So there was no problem with these guys throwing her around and stuff. But that was a little bit of the culture there. Go to the next one. Even though it wasn't quite Halloween, there's some people walking around in masks and stuff. So I thought this was interesting. I don't know what they were trying to do, but you got a samurai something? Fox? And it looks like a cross between a Wookiee and Cookie Monster. I don't know what that is. But it was a nice little, you can zoom in.
Did you go to a furry convention?
I don't know what the hell I went to. I was like, okay.
Who's that guy? We want to know who this guy is.
I went to Japan for work.
But, yeah, well, like I said, we had part of a Sunday before Monday. We started to walk around. There was a place called Waffle God. There's another picture I have of it. And they had these really neat kind of waffles with, you can get bananas and cream and all kinds of stuff. And they had a little soda. It was just, I never heard of it, but apparently it was a real popular place. The next one. So they had these... They're called Matsuris, basically floats, kind of human-propelled floats. They have wheels, but they take a whole bunch of guys to roll them around. And when they hit a corner, there's no steering, so they got to lift this thing up, rotate it, whatever, 90 degrees or whatever, and put it back down. And even though there's a whole bunch of guys, it looked like they're going to blow a blood vessel doing this because apparently this thing is really, really heavy.
Pivot,
yes. But what's neat is they had on top, if you can look at these on top, they have these little doll things. They're sort of puppet mannequin kind of things. And they're, I think they're animatronic because they moved around and stuff. But at first I thought maybe a puppeteer was moving them, and maybe they are, but one of them looked like it might have been computer controlled. And I guess these are some of the different warlords, and they're just reenacting scenes and stuff. But it was just interesting. They had the traditional Japanese flutes playing, and it was just a very interesting site. We're lucky to see it. I think the next one. I think I got a video. Yeah, there's some people standing around.
These guys are done.
Yeah, those guys. Those are the guys that had to lift it up. And it was funny because it was a whole bunch of young guys doing it for most of the work. And they had a few older guys around the perimeter. But, these guys, they were earning their pay that day moving that thing around. And they had to move it several miles, I think, down the streets before they finished. Jeez. Yeah, this was a workout.
That's how that wrestler got so ripped.
Yeah. Here's you don't have to put it overly, but here you can see them moving around. Skipped about halfway in the roughly. Yeah, see the different ones will move, and even one had some pyrotechnics in it. And so
this one shot bullets at the crowd.
Yeah, really, yeah.
A lot of fun.
At one point Godzilla popped his head out. Anyways, okay, just give me the next one. Just give me an idea. And these guys are just kind of sitting there. Japan, you always see weird stuff. I don't know what kind of store it was, but apparently it's patriotic to buy stuff there.
Okay, can this be the title of our show? I hope you'll find something you would like.
Uncle Sam in Japan, yes, he's slumming. Nagoya. Okay, next one. So I did hit up some hobby shops. This one's called Mandarake. This one specializes in vintage and used and kind of oddball stuff. It's a really interesting shop to go to. And I was, I've been to one in Tokyo, and I was surprised to see one with basically within walking distance of our hotel. So I had to pop over there. And so we can go to the next one. It's a really neat place. There's a bunch of plastic models. If you're, I'm into the Gundam and stuff. And I saw that the one on the top left of Dendromion really caught my eye. And I said, well, wow, that's don't see too many of those anymore. And so you can go to the next one. And just a really neat shop of, they have sci-fi kits, trains, planes. These are some stuff from Japanese animation and fantasy. You can go to the next one, I think. This is where they had some trains. It's a pretty big shop. It's got several floors. I think it's got like 3 or 4 floors of stuff. And so you can go figures, comics. They even had some Star Trek stuff. Some Japanese oddball. There's a gold version of the Enterprise. I've never seen anything like that.
45,000.
It was not cheap. Yeah, that's pushing like $300. Hmm. So apparently some real special edition. There you go for you, Lee. Some Voyager stuff.
Voyager.
Yeah, it was kind of neat to see that. Ninja Turtles. So the place I went to for work was at the actual, you can zoom in a little bit. I don't know if you can see the symbol on the left. Does that look familiar? Left? It's kind of behind a tree a little bit. The red.
Mitsubishi?
Yeah, Mitsubishi. Went to Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. This is the plants that they actually built aircraft in, backed out towards the World War II. It's got a long history.
Oh, wow.
So this is, you can see there, they build, I believe they told me, wings structures for Boeing. And they have their own variation of the F-16 called the F-2 that they also build out there for pieces. I want to pause on this picture just a little bit. This is looking out the window towards the Bay Area. Zoom in a little bit. Okay, so those on to the right, to the domes a little bit, there's like a Legoland and a aquarium. And to the left is a clock tower. See the clock tower to the left? Right there. Okay. So they told me that the clock tower is of some significance because the road there that you see was apparently at one point a runway. And so I think it dates back to World War II, where when they built the aircraft there, they used that runway to launch or whatever, to ferry off aircraft, probably the Zero because it's Mitsubishi. And that clock tower has been there since that time, and it represents the aircraft manufacturing. So it's been in like movies and stuff, and it's some historical significance.
Is there a Zero here in these? Zero in here? I'm only hoping, because if you went to the Mitsubishi plant in Japan, Fitz is going to come back with a Zero photo.
I didn't get to see an actual Zero. There was a museum up there that I didn't get to, apparently has a Zero or a Kawasaki. It was funny though. When the last time I was there, I went to the Tamiya shop and they had some ties, and one of the ties had a Zero on it. And so I bought that tie. And so when I went here, I wore that tie with the Zero on it. And let's just say I was pretty popular for it.
Ooh, a sexy man.
Yeah, they really like that. Real quick, that area, Japan is interesting, kind of like America. Certain regions are known for foods, different types of food. So you have, if you go to Boston, there's a certain type of food. You go
clam chowder.
South, clam chowder, down the south, have different things. Same thing here. And are known for something called miso flavored different foods, miso soup. So I had a miso udon, and what was interesting is the bowl on the left was the lid. So they bring out this pot, it's really hot. You pull off the lid, you put the food in the lid, and that's your bowl. And the main pot stays hot for a long time, so your food stays warm. It's really pretty neat, and it tastes pretty good. And they have a few other things that are miso based, katsu. Have you ever had katsu in America? Some chicken wings, I forgot what they're called, they're really good, miso flavored. It was funny. We were going to one restaurant, and the line was so long. We just said, "Never mind. We're going to go to this other restaurant because it was pretty popular." All right, go to the next one real quick. Just some interesting buildings. I thought the building on the right was kind of interesting. Go to the next one. There was a tsunami escape building. I thought this was funny near the Mitsubishi plant. I was like, okay.
I'd be looking up.
Yeah,
if I hear a tsunami.
I was like, okay, should we be scared?
I'm impressed with the graphic on the building there.
Yeah. I don't know if he's being chased by it or being lifted up.
Surf's up, dude.
Yeah. Your product, guys. Can't escape American politics in Japan. We were talking about the election on TV. I snapped this real quick. Next one. So remember that model you saw on the shelf?
Oh, boy.
So yeah, I had to buy it. And it was my shoe for size. It was really big. Wow. Really, really big. So big, it didn't fit in my luggage. So I literally had to bring it on as check-in luggage.
I got
to
read this. Prototype.
Foothold.
Foothold defensive mobile armor.
EFSF. That's the Earth Federation Space Force. If you know, you know. If you don't, you don't. Sorry. But it's a huge one. I bought it for a couple of reasons. A, I knew what it was. I'd seen one a long time ago. I've seen them very rarely. And this place had a really good price on it. So I was egging on with my coworker. I ended up buying it. The yen is really in our favor right now. So I got a super deal. I could literally sell for twice as much here in America.
Except he had to pay for an extra seat on the plane.
No, no, no. I only had one carry on. So I had an extra carry on. All right, we can go to the next one. I saw this because they were talking to some foreigners, and I can only read part of it, so I did a translate. There's apparently a problem with foreigners going to sushi bars, like conveyor sushis, and putting their dirty plates back onto the conveyor belt. And that's what this is all about.
I wouldn't know that that's a bad thing.
So don't do that.
I don't do that.
Don't do that.
I put my plates down on the table.
That's what
I
you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But some foreigners are putting your plates back on the conveyor belt, and that the Japanese were not having that.
Well, let me just say, if you ever find me in a sushi bar in Japan or in the U.S., I'm under duress. Call the cops. Yeah, I you do not like sushi.
I went to a conveyor belt sushi last time I was there. And A, it was really good, but B, they had a lot of other stuff than sushi. They actually had a really good
get you the kid noodle. Chicken tinger.
Yeah,
chicken
you get a whole bunch of stuff other than sushi. So
all right,
don't knock it till you try it.
I have tried it. I don't like it.
No,
regardless.
Other than sushi, I meant the conveyor belt sushi place that has other stuff other than sushi.
That's like when I used to take my kids to Mexican restaurants, and they would get the chicken fingers. You're like, ah.
Yeah, I know.
It's why? Kind of yeah. All right, go ahead.
I'm interested in the cars they drive over there, and it's always funny to see every once in a while you see a big American car. If you've ever been to Japan, big cars don't fit on the roads all that well, so you see this Dodge Magnum.
Yeah, but look next to it. It's got the Lexus LX.
This particular hotel had a bunch of fancy cars. We looked there, there's a Porsche one day, and it's like, who's staying in this place? But I did see a couple American cars, and it's interesting to see that this old Magnum was driving, because this is a big, what, 8-cylinder engine and stuff?
Yeah.
This is not cheap there.
Guys, like, they soup these suckers up, so.
Yeah, this is some bragging rights. If you can drive one of these in Japan, you've got means.
Or if you buy one of those models that he got.
Yes. Yeah, baby. Yeah, knocked this off my shoulder. This is a giant figure that, for some reason, has some notoriety in Nagoya, and they changed the clothes on it, depending on the seasons and all kinds of stuff. So it's literally like 15 feet tall or something like that. Okay, next one. Well, so I went to another shop called Volks, and I didn't have a whole lot of picture. They limited photography in there. Great little model shop. They also sold really expensive dolls for some reason. But this is the I actually met the owner of this guy in America some years ago.
Look at all that glue.
There's a lot. It's great for supplies. This is a lot of supplies for model building and stuff like that. Mainly plastic model building, but you can go in here, you can find resin, you can find tools, all kinds of cool stuff. I think I got one more picture of it. They had some figures that you can get. You can go to the next picture. Yeah, there it is. It's called Volks, V-O-L-K-S. Neat little hobby shop. I was surprised to see one there. Excuse me. This for you, Terry.
I'm out. Oh, yeah, look at that. So you've talked about, are you still on the second hobby shop or is
I think that was only a couple. I only had a couple of pictures of it. Like I said, they limited photography.
Okay, so you've talked about two hobby shops
yeah.
so far. I have not heard the words radio control come out of your mouth.
I did not see any radio control stuff. Didn't have a chance, unfortunately. Radio control is not that. I'm surprised, but apparently, despite all the stuff they sent to America, it's apparently not all that common there, at least in the areas I was in. I think it's more if you're not in the big cities or you got to go out in the country. There are radio control shops. They tend, I think I saw one, but it was not easy to get to. Even though their train service is pretty good, it wasn't that close to a station. So I'm looking out, but it's hard. It's been difficult. So sorry. But I know a lot of it. But anyways, I thought of you, Terry, when I saw this. This was first thing is there's MTV in Japan and they play music videos.
What?
Kind of like you're in America. Yeah, I know.
They didn't get the memo.
And it was this guy floating around in a spacesuit. I thought it was fairly decent looking spacesuit.
It's a good representation of the EMU.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was pretty decent. And it had them floating around in different backgrounds and stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. The next one. Yeah. So I went and visited one of the castles there. This is Nagoya Castle. And this is one of the more famous castles. It's got goldfish on it that show the richness of the owner some time ago. Although interesting, they told me it was damaged in World War II and it was partially rebuilt or so. But it's pretty common. Didn't have the time to go in. I think we were there just before it opened and we had to leave. But I got a nice shot of it.
Is that a moat?
It's a moat. Yep. They're surrounded by moats and these tall walls because it was a castle for the warlord. So they made it so that it was not easy to invade or attack. So you had to cross this large moat. And even if you cross the moat, you got these really steep walls that are hard to climb up. And so they can rain arrows and stuff down on you as you're trying to get in.
And instead of alligators, they throw Godzillas.
They throw Godzillas at you.
And they trained the goldfish.
Yes. They attack. And they do have doors. On one side, there's these large gates, but these doors are huge. I mean, you could probably launch modern rocket launchers at them and not damage to get through those doors. They're really, really durable. All right, next one. This kid was on this suitcase that he could ride. And I said, and he had a seatbelt on. You see the strap behind him. I was like, it was the cutest thing. It was really, really cool. The suitcase doubles as a little riding horse or whatever.
Is it powered or is it just a push thing?
That's like Cattell was not powered. He was, the pairs were just rolling around on it, but he had a good time on it. At the Narita airport, I actually didn't know this. We happened to go up to the second floor to look. We're scouting out for another restaurant. And there's this little platform. You can go outside and sit down and watch the aircraft take off and land. You can see the airplane at the top right taking off. Ooh. It was just a neat little area that you can go outside. Oops. You can go to the next one. So the airport apparently has these autonomous chairs that you can borrow. I think for mobility impaired people, you can sit in and ride them. But when you're done, you just get off and the chair goes back by itself and finds its charge point and resets itself. And I saw several of them running around the airport. One person even kind of accosted it a little. If you get close to it, it'll drop. and somebody was messing with it. They're hanging around it, jumping in front of it, and that kind of stuff.
And so it zapped them. Teaser pops out.
Oh, here's the Waffle Con. I had an outside picture of it. This was a pretty neat place. This was pretty cool. It's sort of a treat, but I think it was Korean-based, but... Of course, if you're a Star Trek fan, the word "con" immediately comes to mind.
Waffle con!
I spit my last waffle at me. While I was there, I had a birthday, and so
happy birthday, Fitz!
Yeah, thanks. I was there, and they found out, and they said, "Well, we had a social. Okay, they gave us a cake." Actually, it was both mine and somebody else's birthday at the same time. So, Yvonne San and Fitz San, happy birthday! So that was really nice of them. Our hosts were very, very nice. I think that's it, right? That's it. Okay. So that was my Japanese trip. Hopefully you got some culture in you and you saw some hobby related stuff.
We've been culturized.
Culture. Anyway, it was a fun trip. It was neat to see a different area. I really had hoped to go to the air museum that was in the city. I just didn't get the chance. There was one on the other side. It looked like it had some cool stuff in it. But it was neat to be in a, we went to that cafeteria one day and at the Mitsubishi plant, and they had these, one of the register was closed, but they had a tarp over it. And on a tarp was this beautiful drawing of a Mitsubishi Zero. And I had forgotten my camera back in the meeting room. It's like, damn it. And when I went the next day, it was gone. And then it was never back again. I was like, oh man. I should have asked, like, how much for that, little handkerchief tarp thing. It wasn't very big, but it was still really, really cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, welcome back. Are you adjusted to Texas time yet?
Mostly. It's not too bad, but in the middle of the day, I feel a little kind of, I needed to take a cat nap.
He did. He literally took a cat nap downstairs when he came here.
Yeah. It's the weirdest thing. And, I went to bed normal last night, but I got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and, kind of just lay in bed for a little while, going in and out of sleep. And I just, about six, I just said, okay, crap, I'll just get up. And then during the day. So mostly there, but it's just a little weird, little lingering thing. hopefully this tomorrow will knock it out of me. But right. But anyways.
Yeah, it's coming back this direction. That's really bad.
Yeah, going there is fine, but coming back is where it really hits you hard.
All right. Okay. Do you know if you'll be going back to that area again?
Probably not that area. Some more meetings are planned in the future. I may be going back again. I don't know when, but usually this was unusual to go to this particular area. So normally probably go back to Tokyo here next time.
All right. Well, cool. All right. What's next? Did you guys have any workbench stuff you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. Oh my God. I got disasters in my workshop. I went into my workshop. Y'all know the story, but the listeners do not. I went into my workshop to move some stuff around, and I noticed a puddle next to one of my planes on the ground. I thought, well, during a search for parts, I tipped over a water bottle, and then I started looking further, and I was like, well, how far did that water go? And I look, and it goes all the way to one wall, and then I look, and it goes all the way to another wall. And then I realize there's a lot of water, and there's a cardboard box that's brown all the way to the top. So I've had problems with my air conditioner, my mini split. You guys go back to several podcasts, you'll hear my whole Mitsubishi mini split and my new Daikin mini split. And I was just, here's the PSA, folks. This new AC company that I brought in, because I've had hit or miss guys. But this one, it was leaking. He confirmed it was low. You know, I've only had it for 2 years. It's been running great. And after talking with him, he repeated what two other guys said, and that's formicary corrosion. Basically, the coils on the evaporator inside my workshop are deteriorating. And this guy went even further. He said, you know, there are places we can't install mini splits. He goes, for example, we have requests to put them in bathrooms. We can't put them in bathrooms because the urine is an acid and it destroys these coils. So he goes, everyone that we are told to install there or anywhere near seawater, like near Galveston, the ones they do in Galveston, they have to get them treated first. They have to be coated with something. And he goes, I'm looking in your workshop. I was like, poor guy. He's looking at all the mess in there. He goes, I'm looking in your workshop. He goes, I see a lot of aerosols. I see a lot of glues. He goes, epoxies. He goes, all these things are going to deteriorate your coils. And obviously, that's what I've been dealing with all along. I mean, he's just basically confirmed what everybody else said. I think your coils are leaking. So he did fill it up. It has been working. But the reason for the leak was the guy I had previously, who was manhandling my unit, who I just did not trust, and I kind of let him go, the drain pipe came off. And so you couldn't see it, and it was dripping slowly down a white wall, and I could not see it. I had, you know, didn't hear it, didn't see it. So I go to pull the cover off, and water just dumps on the floor. So, I mean, I fixed it. I got the drain going back out, and it's cooling in the workshop finally. But if you get a mini split for your workshop, go have it professionally coated, treated before you install it. There's the PSA. Because I now have to go buy my fourth evaporator coil for my workshop.
Is there something different about the coils used in mini splits that they're susceptible but a normal AC unit isn't?
They're supposed to, well, as he said, you know, everything is made cheap these days. He goes, so this is kind of what's happening. Even your home coils are failing because they're using thin metals and they're just not made to last anymore. But he goes, specifically the mini splits, they're trying to cut corners to get these prices down. I was going to make a comment in one of your photos. There's a mini split right out front of the hobby shop. Drone shop.
Yeah,
and someone had mentioned, maybe it was you that said, you know, mini splits are like in every grocery store in Japan. And they're like made to fail. And like the first one I installed was over 3,000. The next one I installed was around 1,800. I now see one similar to one I have for $700. You know, they're just cheaply made and they're made to break. But yeah, the material is just really thin, Terry. So it's just not made to last. And as he said, you know, you got to stay away from salts and glues and solvents because that's what kills them.
And but they're made out of copper, right?
Yeah, they're made out of copper, but they're very thin.
So here's the next question that pops in my brain. If the air quality in your shop is corroding copper, what's it doing to your lungs?
That's a great question.
I was thinking the same thing.
That's a great question, you know. And I do have, to add to this, I purchased intentionally a new fan unit in the bathroom in our workshop that has a higher CFM. And I put a timer on it so that it cycles at least three times a day. so that it's processing air in there. But I also purchased an air filter that had a carbon HEPA attachment to it, and it detects fumes and solvents. Like when it's running, I don't know if you were in the hobby shop that day when I was like using Kicker, it turns red. It's like, alert, danger, danger, you know? And so it gives you a little warning that there's a solvent, but it's made to clean that up. But obviously it didn't, anyway, I mean, I could say obviously it didn't work, but in this case, you know, 2 years wasn't too bad. But the good news, the guy who worked on it, the guy who put refrigerant in it, he couldn't get me a new evaporator coil. And he says they're kind of out of stock until next year. But he says, I'll put Freon in it. He goes, but when we get one for you, here's the name of the shop that we use to get them treated. Go take it in. He says, you go take it in. He's like, he was very nice. He's like, you go take it in. It's about $300. Have them do it. And, you know, then we'll install it for you. Because if we do it, it's going to be $900.
Right. So it was like electroplating kind of thing?
No, it's a dip of some sort. Yeah. Okay. And I think I looked at one of the photos from the shop. It's like blue iodide. What is it called? Iodized. You know, it puts a blue tint on the evaporator coil. And, whatever it is, whatever they put on it, they show them spraying it, whatever, yada, yada. He says that'll do the trick. He says that's going to last at least 10 years.
Maybe they have an inhaler of the same stuff. You can protect your lungs.
Would you like for 10 years?
I mean, I tell you though, I don't know if I had mentioned it, but yeah, I mean, I mentioned it on previous podcasts, but it was 85, 88 degrees in that workshop. It was miserable. And just, you don't want to be in there. You can't enjoy working on stuff in that. So I'm back to some adequate temperatures, and not as good as I'd like them to be. It has been taking longer to cool down. But it has been such a learning process. I hope if anybody's been following these podcasts, and I highly recommend a mini split, but this is just another wake up call. Yeah. You know, they're just made to break. Fitz is just walking around my hobby shop and.
Ooh, he has an old radio.
Yeah, no, and that's the one I had converted to 2.4.
Look at this baby. Isn't that cool?
That is cool. What do you fly with it?
Nothing yet, but I was going to put it on a glider.
Okay, nice. So what protocol is it on?
Oh, I forgot. Tony told me. I got a box for it. Oh, it's maybe FR Sky. I don't know. I don't think it's Fatato. Okay. Right. Yeah, it's just two channel.
So what is it? A Craft single stick?
Yeah, single stick, two channel.
Nice. But you sent it to Tony at Radio South to get converted to 2.4?
He did.
All right. When did that happen?
Last year.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Fitz is really excited. I mean, cool? I might as well just turn this show over to Fitz and let him do a little display.
It's like pocket size.
Fun yeah, the receivers, size.
You know what? Maybe for another show, you'll have to come back over. But the bag, maybe we'll have to do it when you get back. When we get back tomorrow, I'll take you to the workshop and I'll show you the bag of goodies, all the receivers and stuff. So, because I got crazy servos for that thing too, old servos.
Yeah.
All right. So, cool. Yes, I think he likes it.
I think you're right.
AC is running. I got air conditioning in there. I mopped up the water. I only lost a couple of items. I was sad. I lost some balsa wood and all my foam. I had like 10 pieces of sheet foam, not major stuff. Some of it was dollar foam packed, stacked on one side where the water was draining. And they acted as a sponge. So they soaked up a lot of water. But the pink sheet of foam that I had left a huge pink stain on the floor. I mean, and it was like sitting there looking at it, what the hell is that? It was like, and I forgot there was a sheet of pink foam in between. Oh. And so it just stained the floor. I'm moving on.
I'm confused. I just assume regular insulation foam would be water resistant. No, foam board with the paper coating would obviously soak up water, but
well, it did not do well with the water. It just left a nice pink stain all over the floor.
Huh. All right, good to know.
The Dow stuff.
Yeah.
Other than that workshop, I've just got several planes that are in pieces up there. I still need to finish Ryan's B-25. You know, I got stuff I'm working on. That's my workshop stuff. But right now, I mean, I'm heading to a swap meet and hopefully not adding more nightmares to my workshop. But I did make a short list. I won't go over it, but I have a short list of items I need to finish a couple planes, but I'm not going to buy anything in particular. And no one's called me and say, hey, Lee, I got a P-38 for $20. I'll see you at Richardson.
Day's not over yet.
All right.
Well,
I got a couple of things. I think as you saw last time, the Old Crow from the Seagull Models.
Yeah, you were working on the RV last time.
That's RV, or Old Crow. Yeah.
Oh, that's called the Old Crow? Crow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, I made some progress on that. I've got the engine mounted, and I'm going to put a smoke system in it. And I found out the smoke tank wouldn't fit that I had, so I had to order. I think came in today. I ordered a slightly smaller tank to try to get it in there.
Did you talk about this? I'm not remembering.
I don't remember.
So it's an RV8
smoke bladder.
Was that Terry?
What? It's an RV8.
It's an RV8 Old Crow, so it's got so semi warbird looking motive on it. Apparently, okay. It was a real RV8 from a retired military pilot. I can't remember the details. Sorry. It's 40 cc size gas engine on it. And so it's the next review coming up. Really nice. It actually builds pretty quick. It's got some lights on it. And I wanted to put a smoke system on it because I'm using the twin cylinder 40 cc. And same thing that was in my shock cub.
Boo-boo.
Yeah, it should be really nice. So I got the smoke pump and stuff. And so it's just kind of working on that. I had to order a few bits and pieces. And I'll get to work on that. I've got another 3D printed plane I'm working on. It's a newer company, Blancalaria.
Blancalaria.
No, I can't remember the name. Sorry, that's the YouTuber. I forgot the exact name, but there's a company, I think they're a newer player, that's making these really interesting. The subject is probably not the most glamorous plane. It's a Brewster Buffalo.
Oh, nice.
But it's got a lot of really nice detail on it. I mean, it's got rivet details, panel lines. It's really, really good. Cockpit details and pilot. It's really, so when it looks, when it's done, it should be actually really nice. And there's a neat option with the canopy. You can print a solid canopy, or you can print a canopy with just the frames and you put your own glass inside, like a real thin what was it, acrylic? What's the thin stuff? Not like sand.
What's sand?
I guess you can put really anything thin you can, you know, fold over a little bit. So yeah, really thin like sand or
butyrate. Acrylic,
whatever the guys, the free flight guys use. They had a different name for it, I forgot what it was. Polystyrene. Anyways, so it's an interesting experiment because I'm using my bamboo printer, and it's the first time I've used that printer with the LWPLA type PLA, the expanding foam PLA, which is very light. And so at first I was like, will it even work with this printer? But so far it's actually working pretty good. So I had to go and tweak some settings, and I've got a couple different brands I'm working on. So that's going to take a while to print out. I've got the fuselage mostly printed. I started printing some odd bits. So it's a slow but steady process.
So what's the wingspan of this airplane?
No, maybe 36 inches. Something like that. Not okay. Terribly. It's actually, the fuselage is pretty, maybe a bit bigger. I had to double check. Sorry, don't quote me on that. Maybe 1.2 meters or something like that, which is probably in a 40-inch range.
Right. Does it have landing gear?
No, it would be hand launch. Hand launch only. Okay.
Yeah, because the Buffalo had some unique landing gear. Weird geometry.
Yeah, it's almost like the Grumman Wildcat kind of-ish landing gear.
Yeah. It articulates in a unique way.
Yeah, the plane has the wheels molded. When you print it, you can see the wheels there, but they're fully retracted. So it's always just hand launched. Yeah. Should be interesting. So I'll show it to you guys next time.
All
right. And so that's just, for the most part, I got some odds and ends. What else I got? I'm trying to think.
Well, you got that kit to build. From Japan.
Okay. The glider? Oh, the big model. Yeah. I'll get to that. And that's a big model. I mean, it's a model. And it's heavy, too. I picked it up. I was like, get the... So anyways.
We won't have him on a show for several weeks. Sorry, guys. I'm busy.
But I did get an RC model. I thought I was there. A little glider thing. The balsa wood glider I got to build. I need to do that because it should be a quick build. Pretty neat. I don't know what else. I did get another radio link plane, that little Delta wing. I think we talked about that before.
You talked about the aerobatic one.
Right? This is a little triangle, diamond shaped plane.
Okay, it's kind of weird. I don't remember you
call it a D560 or something like that. Okay. But it looks a lot like, I think, I don't know if it was Great Plains or Tower Hobbies had one. It's very similar to it some years ago.
Okay.
I just came in. It's got to go out and get that test flow, and it looks pretty neat. Got some stabilization modes in it and stuff. Or just... So anyways, so yeah, I got a bunch of things here and there and tinkering with oh, you like this, Terry. I was tinkering with the RC cars. I don't know if you saw my live show where I was doing, I went through the Grasshopper, that weird Tamiya car, I forgot the name of it, and the Sandscorcher, kind of see if they worked. And it was the first time I powered up the Sandscorcher with this. It's got this single wheel, the old school radio, kind of the square box, but it has the wheel on it. And I had never powered it up to see if it works. And I put some batteries in, and it didn't do anything. I turned it on, and the meter kind of went up a little bit. I was like, is that it? And it didn't do anything until I jiggled some stuff, and it started working. So it turned out there was an intermittent connection or something inside the transmitter. But it worked. That steering throttle worked. The servos worked. One of the switches was bad in the car. But so I want to keep all that retro.
And just
run that as it is, maybe upgrade, I might put an electronic speed controller. It's maybe the only thing I do. So real happy to see that runs. And the old car I got from the local, not retro, what do you call it, shop? EPO, it's kind of like a...
Surplus Electronics.
That's the one. Surplus Electronics store had this RC car, old Tamiya one. And,
really?
Yeah. I walked in, it's like there's a little Tamiya car inside, in between all the computer parts and stuff. I was
like, well, what like a single unit or a whole selection of them?
No, just one. They had some random stuff, and they had a couple of some plastic models, and somehow they had this vintage Tamiya. I forgot the name of it. It's one I really had never seen before from back in the 80s. Apparently, it wasn't all that popular, but it was built and it had been run or something, but. It came with this transmitter. It came with like a four-channel airplane transmitter. It was really weird. But it worked. It actually worked. And so they had a pretty good price on it. I said, yeah, this little vintage thing, I'll take it home and see if it works. It's kind of for the novelty of it. And then I got the Grasshopper from Sparky. And that one was in pretty good shape. I just needed some radio guts in it. And so I was running that around the yard the other day. The funny thing is, Terry, maybe you can help me on this. Batteries. So a lot of these old Tamiya cars are meant for like 6-cell NiCad packs. And sometimes the battery bays are not shaped very well to try to put a modern lithium in it. And trying to find a battery that would fit the space well. And every pack I tried just wouldn't quite, a 2-cell lithium wouldn't really fit unless I really undersized it. And so if I put a 2-cell 2200, that was not a problem. But trying to find, say, a 3,000 or 4,000 that would fit. A lot of them are hard case, and the cases are just too big to fit into little slots and stuff.
Right.
No. And I think the old Sandscorcher took a 6-cell hump pack. And so that's a really goofy shape to try to fit a lithium in there.
Well, if you look at it this way, that original battery was probably way less than 2,200 milliamp hour capacity.
Yeah, they're usually about 1,200.
Yeah, so even if you need to use a 2,200 to fit, you're at double the capacity you had before and probably better voltage under load. So you're not really giving up anything there. But there are some battery options that... I'll wait till Fitz is done choking. So there are some battery options that fit where old 6-cell and 7-cell NiCad packs used to fit. And one thing I've been experimenting with lately is, I'm sure you're aware of the 18650 size lithium ion cells. There are some of the batteries that size that claim up to 45 amp continuous output. So I bought a few of those. And there's also another size up. I forget what it is, but I think it's 21 millimeter diameter. So a 21 something something. And they also claim continuous output in the 40s, but higher capacity. So I've bought a few of those and I've soldered up a couple packs to try out in my boats and cars. Form factor wise, they would definitely fit in the same space as an old NiCad pack.
Yeah.
And also they're pretty tough because they're steel casing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that's my current strategy in dealing with that. The question is, are they really capable of 45 amps output without damaging? I don't know yet. So more to come on that, but it's promising.
Usually cars and boats don't pull that much current anyways.
Well, when you first accelerate, there's a big spike and then it levels off. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
That is interesting. I didn't thought about the lifeboat batteries.
And what I found that I wasn't aware of, the modern lithium ions are the same voltage as lithium polymers. So I think originally lithium ions were 3.6 nominal, where lithium polymers are 3.7. Now all the lithium ions I'm seeing are 3.7 nominal. So you charge them to 4.2 volts per cell.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah, and you make a good point. I mean, even the 2200s are about roughly twice the capacity and a lot lighter than the old NiCads. So it's not a bad deal. I'm just trying to cram in as much as I can. Yeah. But I ended up getting just a two-cell 2200, and it does fine. No problem.
Yeah.
Interesting that going to the new technology, the form factors have changed. And so,
yeah. And especially if you're still using the mechanical speed control with a resistor.
Yeah, it has that in. Yeah.
It's probably not built to have that much time of resisting. So,
it's a good point. Yeah.
So it probably banks on some cooling off time between packs. But anyway, play with it and see what you get. To me, that's one of the fun parts is adapting modern components, not necessarily the whole thing, but certain modern electronics into a vintage system and see what works, what doesn't.
Speaking of that, both of the older vintage cars, they're so old that they have the old three exposed pin servo connectors, if you remember. I think they call them three connectors.
Yeah, Futaba G.
Yeah.
Futaba G, yeah.
Yeah, so they have the pins are exposed, and so I was like using the alligator clips and all kinds of stuff to try to get it working. But I found that Max Products makes an adapter that goes from the old G to the newer style Futaba. So I ordered a couple of them so I could use those same old servos in a newer receiver for one of the cars.
And they were right angle, too.
Yeah, they were at right angles, yes.
Which is often handy because you don't always have the room for a vertical wires, but a horizontal wire sometimes is better.
Yeah.
But why don't you just snip them off and solder on the J?
I thought about that, but I wanted to maintain the look and of the vintage servos. I didn't want to cut the things off.
I can respect that.
I'm just being weird. I didn't want to cut them off.
That's all right. That's a good answer. All right. Well, yeah, I'm interested to hear. I'll need to go watch that episode and see what you're dealing with there. So I have not seen it yet. So I guess I can't give you a hard time about not watching some of the RC rescues.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. You absolutely can. Yeah.
All right. Anything else we got?
Well, Terry, do you have stuff?
Yeah. So speaking of pink foam and inhaling toxic fumes,
I'm at Terry's house, huh?
So hey, you want to hit this down?
I've been experimenting with the CNC hot wire foam cutter that I bought, I don't know, a long time ago, several months, if not a year ago. And I've done a few odds and ends with it, but the other day I decided that I really needed to invest some time in learning some of the intricacies of using this thing. And since I have an indoor event coming up, it's this weekend. So let me sidebar on the indoor event. I talked about that a few episodes ago, or maybe in the last episode. Anybody who's in Wisconsin or close enough to Wisconsin, you know what? By the time you hear this, it'll probably have already happened.
So, it was awesome.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Get your time to be and go.
Yeah. So that's funny. When I did talk about it, I think I was giving the organizers of this is happening concurrently with a craft fair at the same school. And I was saying, who the heck schedules a craft fair at the same time as a Packers game? Well, turns out that the moron is me because I assumed it was a noontime game. And therefore the schedule of the craft fair and the game were going to overlap. But no, it's a 3:30 kickoff and the craft fair ends at 2. So there actually is not a conflict. They give you an hour gap there to grab your stuff and get home. So if anybody wasn't coming to the event because you wanted to stay home and watch the Green Bay Packers game, well, you don't have to make that choice anymore. You can do both on the same Sunday. What a big
deal. They all heard you just now.
You could have done both.
And twos and threes showed up.
Well, I assume most people are smarter than me and actually looked at the schedule and figured out that it wasn't really a problem all along. So anyway, with that coming up, I thought this is a good opportunity to use my foam cutter to make something lightweight and simple for this indoor event. Because it's such a big area, of course, you can fly UMX size planes and they'll work, but I wanted something a little bit bigger that would also fly in there, which means it needs to be big, but light. So I just, my mind went back to a plane from the late 90s called the Blue Foamy. Does that mean anything to either of you?
Yes. So funny you mention that, because when you showed a picture, I said, why, that looks familiar. And then I remembered I had one. Somebody made them and sold them, right? And I had, at one point, I don't know if I ever got it flying, but I actually had that kit at one point in my modeling history.
Oh, you don't think you have it anymore?
If I do, I have not. It's in a box somewhere. I have not seen it.
I think the guy's name was Pat Matz. Anyway, so on
names.
This would have been before RC Groups was RC Groups. I think this would have been the E-Zone era.
Yes, yes.
So when Speed 400s and NICADs ruled, this guy made a kit, and it was just the essence of simplicity. It was a hot wire cut fuselage that was in a U shape. So basically, the inner dimensions of the cutout were the outer dimensions of a Speed 400.
Right,
so
right.
you would epoxy your motor on the front. I don't think it even needed a firewall. Maybe it was a firewall.
But epoxy to rubber band it in or something like that.
Yeah. And then there was a hot wire cut Hershey bar wing that you could do whatever configuration you want of dihedral or no dihedral, add ailerons, don't add ailerons. And maybe it had balsa tail surfaces. But it was like the Garanimals of RC, just basically a super simple straight fuselage and a super simple wing. You put it in the configuration you want. And the components just sit inside this U-shaped channel. And you have all the basic ingredients of an airplane and you mix it together the way you want. So I never had one of those, but I always admired the thought process that went into it. And so that's what I was thinking when I came up with this airplane for the indoor. And since I have this CNC cutter, it has a library of different airfoils and different shapes. There you go, the Blue Foamy. All right, so I had balsa tail surfaces. I think a lot of people put spars in there, like hardwood spars or something. But anyway, you can, from the picture that is on the screen now, you can see just how simple this thing is.
It was a no-frills airplane model.
Yeah. But everybody seemed to love them, and why not? They're simple, cheap, fun. And so let me grab the one that I built. One sec. So you can see the similarity here. It's a U-shaped fuselage, and this U-shaped cross-section is one of the built-in profiles on this CNC foam cutter. So all I had to do was say, I want a U-shape that's this wide, and I put a 24-inch piece of foam in there, which is the maximum width of this foam cutter, and I hit start, and the next thing you know, I've got a full fuselage ready. And then for the wing, this is a Clark Y airfoil. So I just said, I want a Clark Y with this cord of constant cord, and bada bing. I get a 24-inch panel, and then I cut another one. And here's the cool part that I didn't figure out until I was in the middle of this. The cutter also has a miter function, which basically you can make straight down cuts, but you can tell it to cut at an angle. So when I wanted to make these angled tips for adding dihedral, I just said, cut it at 10 degrees, and it would make a 10 degree cut on both panels. I put them together. I've got exactly a 20 degree dihedral angle at the end. So doing that sort of stuff, I get to play around with the different features of this foam cutter, kind of figure out what it can do. And in the process, I made a pretty neat little airplane. So I added some hardwood in certain places because I'm using an outrunner motor. You can't really epoxy that inside the channel. So just a firewall in the front, and then a little light ply battery tray and some doublers for the wing rubber band holders there. And that's kind of it. There's two like 5 gram servos are just epoxied in and super simple push rods. I like to use these Dubro razor push rods, excuse me, razor control horns, because they just push into the foam and they've got a little keeper on the back. So super simple all the way around. With a 2-cell 500, this is it's right at 7 ounces, and it's just under 2 square feet of wing area. So what does that work out to? Like 3 point something ounces per square foot, which is ridiculous. I've had one outing where I test flew this thing and it was a bit breezy, but it flew fine in the breeze. And it actually was a decent sailplane. I would kind of zoom up and shut the motor down and cruise around for a while, and it would take it a while to come back down. So I haven't flown it in calm conditions yet. That will be this weekend at the actual indoor. I'm expecting that it will fly even better indoors. So we'll see. And so that was it. It was kind of the motivation was to have a plane for this indoor event, but also to learn about my CNC cutter. And oh, another neat thing, just like I was able to cut the angles for the dihedral on my tail surfaces, which are Depron, 6mm Depron, I can change that to 45 degrees and cut my hinge lines. Oh. And then I just use blender and tape. And then
easy mode.
I was doing some of this last night. I'm like, wait a minute. Because what I had to do is I would cut a 45, and then the vertical or horizontal stabilizer also has a 45. So you got to go back and cut that one vertically. I'm like, wait a minute. If I just change the angle to 23 and then I flip the other part upside down, they both have a bevel that equals 45. And so I went from 2 cuts to 1 with a little bit of noggin work there. So anyway, I'm continuing to find out more about this stuff. I'm pretty sure I've taken years off of my life already. Most of this work I've been doing with the cutter down in my workshop, which doesn't have any ventilation. I've got a fan going, but I'm really just recirculating the same air in the basement. One session I did, I took it outside and I was in the driveway doing it, and that was better. But I really need to install an exhaust fan in here, because I expect to be doing some more of this work in the wintertime, where going in the driveway is not an option. So, yeah.
Maybe you mentioned it, but what motor are you using in there?
Oh, you guys are going to make fun of me. All the electronics, from the servos to the receiver, the motor, the speed control, they all came out of a Hobby King Tiger Moth. I didn't know Hobby King used to make a Tiger Moth, but the De Havilland Tiger Moth, apparently they made a foamy version of that 10, 15 years ago. And I was given one, and
which he immediately destroyed.
Well, ripped the guts out and stomped on the airframe.
I was going to consider it. The airframe wasn't in horrible shape. All the wing struts were missing, so I was going to have to find a way to recreate those. But I picked it up, and it was just heavy for how big it was. I'm like, man, this thing is a brick. And then when I decided to break it apart and scavenge electronics, split the parts of the nose, and I found this. This is a chunk of steel. that was up there by the motor. I guess it needed that for balance. Mm. And the servos, as small as they are, and work well in this airplane, and that Tiger Moth, they were just really oversized, and like everything was just kind of clunky about it. So I didn't feel bad parting it out. So this is some sort of tiny outrunner. It's called a 2211. So I would guess 22mm diameter. But it's got a 5.3 prop on it, and I run it on that 2-cell 500 milliamp hour. I should tell you that I haven't put it on a watt meter yet, which is unusual for me. I'll have to do that soon. Yeah, I know. I'm using Hobby King stuff, and I haven't put it on a watt meter.
Let's see, Dots and Cats are living together.
Yeah. Ask me a question only Terry would know the answer to. anyway, so go ahead.
So, I don't mean to interrupt you, but no. Do you think it'll fly slow enough to do indoor? Okay.
At 3.5 ounces per square foot, it better. I assume so, because I don't know, every place you fly indoor, no matter how big it is, suddenly seems way smaller as soon as you launch your airplane. But I don't suspect that's going to be much of an issue here. Ask me again on Monday and I'll tell you, but I do think it's going to be fine. So. I think it's going to fly slower than some of the brushless UMX planes that I have, which although they're smaller, they some of them really have to scoot to fly well.
Can you put it in front of the camera so we can get a good view? You've been looking at your mug. We want to see the plane.
Yeah.
No, put it in front of your face.
Thank there you go. You. Cover your face completely. Okay. maybe I can't remember if you mentioned it. So was this a complete scratch or did you have some plans or dimensions did you went from or was it just sort of eyeballed it?
Well, I knew I wanted to emulate the Blue Foamy profile. And because the maximum width I can cut is 24 inches on my foam cutter, that kind of dictated the size of this thing. So the fuselage is 24 inches long and the wing panels are, they started at 24 each by the time I did some trimming. So I think the overall span now is like 45 inches, but yeah, that kind of set the parameters of where I was going with this. And then once I decided that these Tiger Moth parts were going to be a good fit for it, that kind of decided where everything went. So to answer your question, I made it up as I went along, but I had a few limitations that made the decisions for me.
Not necessarily an exact copy, but it's a near clone.
Yeah, it's with the same mindset of just the simple U-shaped fuselage and a Clark Y airfoil with a Hershey bar profile. And I could change it up. I could taper the outer panels if I wanted, or I could make it with a dihedral joint in the middle. The reason I did this is because there's no spar in here. There's no tape. There's no spar. And I figured if I move the dihedral joints out there, there's less stress on them. That's so true. This was a strength thing. But really, I haven't seen much use for it. The wing doesn't really flex in flight. Not that I'm doing Lemshavox with this thing, but I did do some loops and other stuff and inverted flight and the wing seems strong enough, knocking on wood. Maybe I think some people with like the Ace foam wing and other stuff like that, you can use strapping tape as a sort of spar.
Oh, I haven't read in a long time.
Yeah.
These are the Zagis.
So, yeah, and that's another thing. I've been trying to emulate the profile of the Ace foam wing. So for plans that use that foam wing, I can whip out some cores to use that. As a matter of fact, remember the old Ace Simple 400?
Simple 400.
Yeah, it was a Speed 400 powered thing. It looks a lot like an Electro Streak, but just balsa fuselage, Ace foam wing. My buddy Tony found one of those at I guess it was an estate sale or something. It was being given away at his club, and nobody else wanted it. So he's like, hey, you want this thing? I'm like, you bet I do. So he brought it to me, and I can cut a wing for it now.
So, yeah, but also we could do the Ace, they had a tapered and the straight.
Yeah, so I've been talking to my buddy Thayer because he had examples of them in his shop. So he's measuring them for me and giving me the dimensions. Figured out the airfoil is a NACA 2415, which is one of the profiles in that machine.
So
theoretically, I can just plug in the numbers and it'll spit it out.
Yeah, because there's a whole, Ace had a whole series of planes, and there's plans too that had a whole, there's a whole bunch of plans you can find that use those foam wings as well. So that opens up a huge world of interesting models you can build, speed for roughly sized.
Yep. And now, this is not to say that I haven't made a bunch of garbage with my foam cutter, but you know, again, that was kind of the point of this, to figure out the do's and don'ts. I've just made some dumb mistakes and kind of find the limitations of what it does well. But I'm getting more consistent with cutting good profiles.
So well, that's great. Sounds like a great tool to have.
I've only burned my hand a few times. I still have my fingerprints. So, yeah, I will let you know as I get more adventurous. It has lots of features I haven't touched yet. It's got what it calls like a pseudo lathe or a fake lathe where you can kind of cut round, like tapered profiles.
Maybe. You can do with that?
Yeah, I'm still feeling that out. I'm in the 101 stage when I get to the graduate level stuff.
Yeah, down the road, we'll see. Does it have, lofting features?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, we'll learn about it and get back to us.
Okay. So right now, my biggest limitation for projects in my head is, like I said, the span limitation is 24 inches and the cord limitation is about 12 inches. So for larger scale stuff, I'm thinking about maybe an 80-inch span thing. You can make multiple sections and glue them together, but you're still limited by that 12-inch cord maximum, which there's really no practical way to
What if you use it to make ribs and then you use, you know, tubing?
Well, the rib profile, the cord of the rib is still limited.
Still 24 inches.
No, because it cuts perpendicular to that.
Yeah.
So now, one thing I did figure out, which I thought was going to be more difficult than it was, is this machine reads G code. Like most CNC type machines, you feed it G code and that's how it knows what to cut. What I figured out how to do is take a two-dimensional drawing from CAD, convert it to G code that this machine understands. So it has an SD card. In addition to the built-in profiles, I can add my own shapes that it will cut. And my first experiment with that is floats. So I did a 2D drawing of a float profile, and I basically emulated the E-Flight UMX floats just in the proportions. And I exported that as a DXF. I used this program to convert that to G-code. Then I had to massage it a little bit to get it to the parameters that this thing likes. And I basically cut some floats that I intend to try on some UMX planes and maybe even this little pink lady. So what's different is these are flat bottom. The stock E-Flight floats have a V-groove on them. And I sometimes suspect that that's problematic because if they're not aligned perfectly, you can veer around because it catches an edge. So we'll see if the flat profile is any smoother. I don't know. Are we thinking? Because we sure aren't talking.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you could put that V in it. You cut the V first and then move the part around and cut the profile.
Yeah, I'm sure there's ways that you could make all that happen. Like you could use that miter function with the angles. Like you make one cut for the basic profile. And so I've got a set of floats back here where I cut it as a square cross section, and then I went back and angled it so the top is narrower than the bottom. So you could do something like that to add a V if you wanted. So there's options. Again, I got to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah, part of the learning process. But it's still actually a really neat tool for scratch builders and stuff once you get the gist of it.
Yeah, I need to keep a notebook next to this machine. It comes with a really nice guidebook that gives you the basics, but I need to keep notes on the things that I'm learning in case there's a gap before I use it again. I don't have to relearn all of these lessons. And I need to find more sources of the foam. I found a 4x8 sheet of it in a dumpster a long time ago, and I've been working off that. And then my buddy Aaron gave me some more a few days ago. But the scrap rate is pretty high right now, so I've gone through a lot of foam.
Have you found sometimes local companies that sell it? Have you looked around?
I can certainly buy it. It's like 40 or 50 bucks for a 2-inch thick sheet of 4x8. But there's got to be like offcuts of it here and there. That
check your Facebook Marketplace basement finds.
Yeah, that too.
Maybe put a one ad out.
Yeah,
it's buddy. I'm looking for some big foam.
Yeah.
So I'm sure for a size that most people wouldn't even think twice about throwing in the landfill, I could make something. To make this complete airplane, I can use a 24x9-inch footprint. And that's enough foam to create a whole thing. By 2-inch thick.
Okay.
So anyway, that's what I've been doing.
That's enough.
Yeah, I think so. It's keeping me busy and shortening my life. So I'll be hacking up some pink boogers.
Hopefully your little plane will fly well tomorrow.
Sunday.
Yeah. Or Sunday. Yeah. Whatever day. Yeah. So this weekend.
So Terry?
Fitz?
How's the Eindecker going?
I'm looking at it right now.
Looking at Billy.
You've been looking at it from that position for many weeks.
It got pushed back on the workbench to make room for the phone cutter. But yeah, keep nudging me, like pester me, and I'll get it going. I promise. It takes up too much space in the workshop to, yeah, to ignore it. So, all right. Are we done? Are we finished?
I think we're jabbering? Done. We kind of rambled there, got some Japanese stories in there, new planes, Lee's AC dilemma, Terry's new venture into foam.
Ventures in foam
cutting. And whatever you call it, inhaling toxic fumes.
Somebody pull Terry off the ceiling.
So our next podcast will be a follow-up of the weekend indoor fun fly.
Postmortem.
The swap meet. Well, hopefully Fitz and I will have show and tell. And anything else on the agenda, Terry?
I don't think so.
All right. I think it's good.
I think that's a wrap, then. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for watching. Who's going to do the outro here?
You?
I've never done one before. I'm so nervous. God.
Good luck. Hope you don't screw it up.
So thanks for watching. We appreciate you. Hit like and subscribe. Send all your nasty hate mail to Terry. He loves that stuff. And send your nudes to Fitz. Anyway, thanks for watching, you guys.
Wow. Yeah. That was so exciting. Yeah.
So we do appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Send us comments and suggestions and tell us about the projects that you've been working on. If you have hints for cutting foam without killing yourself, please let me know. And if you know, that's a different thing. I was about to ask about BECs in parallel.
But we'll follow up on the BECs. Yeah,
that's the other thing.
I'm sure we'll be correct on that.
All right. So in the meantime, we're going to go have some fun doing stuff this weekend. So
yeah, we're going to go to bed right now. Get ready for the 4 a.m. wake-up call. All right, guys. Thanks for watching.
Please visit our website at rcroundtable.com. That's where you will find all of our podcast episodes. You can also find a little bit of background information about the show host and leave comments and suggestions about the show. There are links to a few of our favorite vendors and also links to our various social media accounts. Thank you for watching and listening.